It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Shackles Are Off podcast. Now, another bumper guest for Chris and I to bring to you, which we actually recorded a few weeks ago now. This guest, by the way, that we've got to come up before we start chatting everything else, Commonwealth Games and England and all that kind of stuff. This guest, brilliant guest, because he actually got a bit of a reference in the Kevin Peterson podcast, which we put out a few weeks ago, Chris, because you really look like Luke Wright.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure KP said that I was a thinner version of Luke Wright, and I'm delighted to hear that. Cheers, Kev.
A thinner version. A minute ago, before we started recording, it was a better-looking version.
I thought that was a bit harsh. He's still a handsome chap, isn't he?
Oh, dear. Well, anyway, he was really good company, actually, Luke Wright. And I think, actually, fairly undervalued and underrated. He falls into, you know, that kind of category of players who've been really good, helped to turn around and transform, but then actually kind of just fallen away a little bit, just discarded a little bit. He talks us through that, which is quite an interesting dynamic, really, because it was a tricky one to breach. I think you brought it up with him, actually, from memory, and said, what did it feel like, you know, the World Cup without, winning the World Cup, you should have been part of that team kind of thing. Mm. And if he didn't deal with it very well, goodness gracious, Chris, that would have been a disaster. But actually, he was, he dealt with that one really, really well. So we're looking forward to playing you that in just a couple of moments' time. But just around the corner, the Commonwealth Games, in fact, actually, as we record this, starts today in Birmingham, big celebration of sport in the West Midlands. In fact, actually, it's probably, you could say, Chris, probably the biggest event that's ever been held in the West Midlands in terms of sport. I can't really think. I mean, obviously, we've had the Cricket World Cup there and World Cup football match. But in terms of like a big global event, massive, massive event.
Yeah, without doubt. And it's going to be a very exciting time for the city, and what a city it is. We've had so many good times in Birmingham. On the Holly Stand, in and around Edgbaston's a place, and then obviously out and about on Broad Street later on in the evening. But it's definitely the place to go. Edgbaston will be hosting all of the competitive fixtures that the women's T20 will be playing for the Commonwealth Games for the first time, isn't it, Greggy? First time ever for cricket in the Commonwealth. Is that a good sign?
I think it's a good thing. Yeah, I do think. I did raise my eyebrows a bit because I thought it was, you know, all javelin and archery and all the usual kind of stuff. I'm not even sure if they're both in it. I'm pretty sure they will be. But I was like, what is this all about? Cricket. But actually, I think it's a really good time for it. Yeah, and it's T20 cricket, which is a nice, fast, obviously accessible way to get teams in. And it's eight teams going head-to-head in the battle for gold.
And got to be England, hasn't it? Gold medal? Got to be England, you'd
think so. I can't. They dropped a couple of players, which I thought, what is this all about? Heather Knight, brutal, saying, I think it's Tammy Beaumont that's been dropped. And I thought, hang on, Tammy Beaumont's like, first name on the team sheet, and she surely T20. No. She strike rate is too low, apparently. I was like, wow. No way, she's getting quite brutal. So There we go. So anyway, that starts in the next couple of days, I think, the women's cricket tournament. And then that final takes place on Sunday, the 7th of August. Chris, who do you want in the final? England, who?
It's got to be England-Australia, hasn't it? Got to be England-Australia. Tickets for just £8. That is unbelievable for under-16s and £15 for adults. You've got to get yourself down there. You'll hopefully see some great group matches and then we'll beat the Aussies in the final to take that gold medal.
There will not be any cricket priced better than that anywhere in the country, I don't think, for the rest of the year. So definitely get on that. Birmingham2022.com to get your tickets. There you go. You are welcome. Chris, any other business before we get into Luke Wright? I'm trying to think what's happened since we last spoke. We've got, obviously, the ODI series. Shame it got rained off on Sunday against South Africa. Had that India white ball series as well, to be fair.
So much cricket.
It's a lot, isn't it? And you're well more across it than me. Mm. So how busy is that schedule until like literally the middle of next year?
Well, it doesn't. It's relentless, really, to be honest. No wonder Stokes, he said that it wasn't tangible for him to play all three formats anymore. It's like there's very few players doing it now, and we're going to keep seeing the shift that way, which is a shame because you won't see the best players necessarily in each format of the game. But it is what it is. It's the product that is cricket now. And we move. We still go and watch. We follow. We love it. And one thing that was nice to see yesterday was Moeen Ali hitting a ridiculous 50 off 16 balls in the T20. Unbelievable hitting from the boy. Like, absolutely unbelievable. What a player. What a man. What a legend. We need to get him on.
We do, actually. I can't believe we've not had Moeen Ali on the podcast yet. He's one of those players, isn't he? Because he's been doing it for so long. You just kind of take him a little bit for granted. But, you know, if there was a cricketing summer in England that came around and Moeen Ali was a new boy now, how excited would everybody be about him?
Oh,
that's what I always think about these players that we kind of take for granted a little bit. A bit like Joss, a bit like Joe. You kind of go, if this was their first summer in England playing in an England shirt, we'd all be buzzing about Moeen Ali, like absolutely buzzing. And that's quite a nice yardstick to have to kind of measure him against. But yeah, brilliant.
Absolutely.
It's very busy this summer. Maybe this guy, Luke Wright, is going to get a call up. Maybe.
You know what? Luke Wright, I genuinely think he could have a statue in Australia one day for all the work he did in the BBL. Like, what a legend. I know we talk about it on there, but I was just thinking that, yeah, Luke Wright, he's probably as famous in Australia for the work he did in the BBL as he is in England for winning the World Cup. So, yeah, well done, Luke. You've spent your winters well.
He did spend his winters well. Right. We have we got anything else to get through? I don't think we do. We'll just get straight into the podcast. Chris and I will be back in a couple of weeks' time with another bumper guest because we've got a few in the can. We hope you enjoy the Joss Butler podcast as well. And we've had some big names. The big names keep coming. It's Luke Wright here, World Cup winner Luke Wright, and the Shackles Are Off podcast. Luke, great to have you on the Shackles Are Off podcast. We've been wanting to get you on for a while. We've talked about you quite a lot as well. We did a little T20 World Cup special last year and we were talking about, well, you obviously came up quite a lot in that. And yeah, it's great to have you on. And I can't believe this is your 20th season as a professional cricketer.
It feels about like my 30th, to be honest. But yeah, it's mad, isn't it? I mean, I can't remember a time where I wasn't at Sussex. It feels that long ago, but the lads are definitely getting younger at Sussex and they look at me like, who's this granddad hanging around at the minute? So it's certainly coming to the end at some point, that's for sure.
Oh, really? No, don't say that. You're not going to do a Steve-O then, you know, remodel yourself, make yourself into, you know, just bowling a little wibbly wobblers.
No, I think I've got, what have I got? I've got one more year on my contract next year in T20. And I thought that would probably be me.
Oh, really? Oh, dear me. Is that a Shackles Are Off exclusive, by the way, I think we've got?
Well, it could be, I suppose. Yeah, I haven't really thought about it. But to be honest, I mean, who knows what's going to happen. But that's where my contract is. And I'd sort of in my head thought 38's a pretty good stint. So I don't want to be like Steve-O, to be fair. Good luck to him. But I can't see me playing in the 40s, that's for sure.
To be fair, you packed quite a lot into that 20 years. It's quite difficult to really know where to start. But that World Cup win is probably not a bad place, is it, to be fair? I mean, look, important innings and contributions to that. That just seems, you know, for people like Chris and I who watch that as sort of relatively young cricket fans, it just seems like the most unbelievable thing. It seems to grow a little bit more each year in terms of like how important that was. Absolutely quality. Do you ever really reflect on that when you're just having a quiet minute to yourself? The fact that you did win the World Cup with England, with basically a team that just went out there and just treated it like it was a bit of fun, and basically nobody got near to beating you. What an amazing achievement that was.
Yeah, I mean, I try and talk about it for at least an hour every day to all the lads, but no one will listen anymore. But no, I mean, it is incredible. I feel that at the time it was sort of, I think people did appreciate it, but it probably wasn't as big a thing as it probably would have been in the last sort of, you know, 5-10 years if we'd won it now. But yeah, I mean, it was incredible. And to win it in Barbados and have the fun we had out there as well. I mean, and as you said, it was a team that you wouldn't necessarily, we were never going to be favourites looking at a team, but it just seemed to gel and it worked. And Collie was awesome as captain, and it just, everything seemed to just go our way. And then to beat, obviously, Australia in the final. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything better than that, could you?
No, definitely not.
And we spoke to a few people, Luke, on the show that have told us about the famous night that ensued. Was at Harbour Lights afterwards? It was a bit of a big one, wasn't it?
It wasn't bad, actually. It was quite funny. Because when we went out, I mean, someone's probably said we were trying to get in. And if you got in, obviously, if you were part of the cricket team, then you got a certain colour wristband that got you free drinks in Harbour Lights, which was awesome. But the bouncer didn't believe that Treaders was a cricketer. and we were stood outside with poor Treaders trying to Google him to show that the bouncer that he was part of the team. The poor lad. And in the end, we got him a wristband. But it was great fun. I mean, Harbour Lights is good fun at the best times, isn't it? So after you just won a World Cup, I think we were all sort of just, you know, almost in shock a little bit as well. But it was great fun. And it was nice because, as you said, we were with all the Barmy Army fans just mixing in, which made it more special.
Yeah, that's something we've spoken to a couple of young lads in the last few weeks on the podcast, where we've spoken to Saki Mahmood, we've spoken to Matty Fisher as well. We've obviously had loads of sort of youngish lads, Ollie Pope and Currens, etc. on the podcast, Zach Crawley, young lads making their way in English cricket. And they all say the same thing, that they look forward to playing in front of the Barmy Army and getting their own song and that kind of stuff. Was that something that was on your mind when you were sort of making your way? I know it's obviously, it's just a goal in itself to play for England, but playing in front of the Barmy Army is a big part of it, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, to be honest, I was never really good enough to get my own song, so I never got that far. But I mean, it was great fun. I mean, even like, you know, obviously in that World Cup final again, going back, I mean, it was pretty much, it felt like, you know, 90% Barmy Army. So the crowd's amazing. I think for everyone, you know, and everyone, you know, I've obviously toured around the world playing in franchise cricket, and everyone always talked about how much they enjoy the Barmy Army being away. You know, it makes it for Test cricket as well. So, yeah, it's great for the young lads, and hopefully they get their own song, like you said.
Does anything really compare? Because when you look at some of these big T20 blast nights, I'm thinking Chris and I have been to a lot of the Roses games when we were living in Leeds, and there's so many different amazing stadiums packed out Friday night, all the flamethrowers bopping about, etc. Even finals day. Domestic cricket is just awesome over here. I've never actually been to a franchise game anywhere around the world. You've played loads and loads and loads of it. How does it differ? Is it like a completely different atmosphere? Can you compare a big T20 blast evening, you know, quarterfinals, etc., to a group game in the IPL, for example, or a group game in the Big Bash? How does it compare? How does it differ? How does it get your juices flowing as a cricketer?
Well, I think in the IPL, I mean, the fans just love cricket, don't they? So although they obviously have their team they support, I think they're just so happy that they're watching cricket, and they love just seeing all the different stars, don't they? So even if they lose, they're sort of still cheering the other team, cheering players, etc. So you don't always feel like you get that huge rivalry. Whereas, you know, obviously watching that Roses game the other day, you see the passion in the fans, as see it in the players, as desperation, isn't there, to beat each other, which is great. And I think that's why, you know, you get a bit more banter at the games in domestic cricket in England, so to speak. But no, I think, you know, I was lucky in the Big Bash. We obviously had the Stars versus Renegades a lot. And although obviously it was from the same state, there soon was a big, you know, there was a massive rivalry. It was almost one team either went with sort of Maxwell or the other team went with Aaron Finch. And it was almost, that was sort of similar in a sense, where it just was about players rather than actually just about, you know, to a county or so. But so that was awesome. We obviously played for some huge crowds in the Big Bash. But, you know, for us, you know, obviously with our rivalry is Hampshire, and you feel it, you know, people are desperate to beat each other. And I think it's great that the Blast is thriving. I know there's been talk about can it survive and et cetera. And for us, absolutely, you know, I desperately hope it does. And I'm sure it will, because it's awesome to play it in. And you see the local fans coming to watch. You know, we want the 100 to do well as well. But seeing the Sussex fans, they're desperate to keep watching cricket.
So good. Chris, you've had the pleasure of watching Luke down the years, and just one thing that actually struck me there. Why didn't Luke have his own bloody Barmy Army song? Are you going to have to put that to some of the older guard? I don't think Chris, to be fair, is to blame for this, but Chris,
I don't think I ever batted for long enough to be able to get a song.
Yeah, I think it's a latest form of the Barmy Army is more of an ODI and T20 following. I know we've always done the major tournaments, but there's a lot more tours going on following the ODIs and the T20 teams all around the world now. And I know, unfortunately, you never played a test match, did you? Well, not yet anyway. But you were included in one squad. What was that like to have a time in the test squad and unfortunately not to make the call? Was it quite deflating in your career, or was it something that you wanted to carry on trying pushing towards?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting, because I mean, everyone just presumes really that, you know, I've just been a T20 player now. That's all they sort of remember us for. But I mean, you know, I was just, as you said, I got into that test squad. I played close to 150 four-day games, championship games for Sussex. So for me, actually, you know, like everyone else, it was always the pinnacle. And I went on that South Africa tour, and it came pretty close, actually. I remember Belly was going through a horrendous time. And Morsey had pulled me aside before we were at Brisbane. And said, look, I think you're going to make your debut tomorrow. It's not set in stone, but we'll see, sort of thing. And I actually remember in the morning watching Jimmy Anderson was bowling left arm spin to Belly in the morning, still getting him out. He was in that bad a nick somehow. Wow. And I thought, I'm definitely playing it. And Morsey actually came up to me and said, look, gut feel, we're going to give Belly one more go, which was, to be fair, absolutely right. And he went and got 150, and that was it. So it was absolutely the right decision. And I think it'd have been a mark against Test cricket if I'd have actually made a debut. It's probably fair enough, to be honest. So, but I absolutely loved it. And, you know, and then it was really from that moment that England really just started picking me more, obviously, in white ball. So whenever I'd go back to my county, I'd play four-day cricket. But, you know, whether it was in the evenings or practice days, I was always getting ready for a series with England. So I'd just be practicing white ball all the time. And like things happened, slowly got better at that. And obviously my red ball probably suffered slightly because of that, but I certainly have no regrets whatsoever.
Can you remember the time when you actually made not a conscious decision, because like you said, that you kind of realised that your game was suited to white ball, and it's probably a natural progression. It's not like a light bulb moment. Ah, I'm going to play some franchise stuff as a bit of a career. But can you remember kind of a particular draft or a particular moment when you got a call from, I don't know, your agent or whatever, and you thought, actually, this is good. I'm enjoying this. I can basically become this kind of freelance player for hire, enjoy myself, go around the world. Everybody we speak to, by the way, about franchise cricket, say it's awesome, like so fun. All the stuff that we don't see here in the UK, all the little gala dinners and meeting fans and meeting the sponsors and these big dudes. I mean, some of the experiences you must have had, mate, must be like off the charts, really.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't, I wasn't sort of, as I said, it wasn't a conscious decision where I was saying, right, that's enough, I'm going to give it up. So I said, I kept playing 4-day cricket a lot. But the one thing, when you're in any England squads, you naturally don't play that much for your county. So when I would, I, probably 7 games a year, then I was playing a championship cricket because of all the one-day cricket or 2020. So it was really at that point where I started to really drift away from any chance of playing test cricket. And as you said, and then at that point, it was almost, right, well, I was getting offered these gigs around the world, and it wasn't a case of, right, now that's me done. But look, I mean, playing French cricket, it made me a better player as well. I sometimes wish, you know, if I could have done the franchise cricket like a lot of the young lads do now and then played my 100 games for England, you know, I feel like I could have done better. I was certainly a better player after playing all that franchise cricket. So, and look, it's amazing fun. It is awesome fun. And I think the one thing that ECB, I mean, I remember me and Rav were talking the other day about it. Papara was saying, I remember getting a call off Sachin Tendulkar, I think in the second or third year of the IPL. Wow. And I thought it was bloody Chris Nash, to be honest. I thought he was taking the mic. And he offered me to go and play for the Mumbai Indians. And but the ECB then said, no, you know, if you go off to the IPL, you won't get picked for England. So I remember me and Ravi actually turned it down. So from where it's gone now to where they encourage the lads to go, you know, which is absolutely right. I mean, it does make you a better player, especially obviously for white ball, but I've loved it. I mean, mates around the world, my wife's obviously from New Zealand. So all these different things that has changed my life really with franchise cricket. It's been amazing.
Which is your favourite? You must have a certain preference.
This, Chris, he's trying to get a job probably, you know, batting consultant.
Big Bash was special for me. It was the first time I'd, you know, obviously been in overseas, especially playing over in Australia. And the crowds, I mean, in those first sort of 4 or 5 years, the crowds were insane. The competition was amazing. And our team was, you know, was a joke at the Stars. Like, I mean, got to play with Shane Warne. I mean, play with Shane Warne was incredible. And to play with him in Australia was, you know, something so special. I mean, every ground we played at, we'd be a sold out to see Warney. And then as soon as he come on to bowl, even all the away fans, everyone stood up and were just bowing to Warney. To be part of that, I mean, you know, it's something else.
Class. That's so cool. I mean, what strikes me is that sometimes, because we are so insular, I'm as guilty as anyone with this, is that we watch it a bit and here and there we enjoy it, and you might have a favorite franchise and you sort of chat about it with your mates at the club or on the WhatsApp group and this kind of thing. And then you kind of almost forget until the following year. So forgive me on this, but some of the teammates you'll have played with down the years, I mean, you will have a list that 30 years ago you just wouldn't have been able to ring off. I played with this person, this person, this person, this person, this person. You must have like one of the best lists in the world for that, you know, like legendary, just people you spent 6 weeks with, for goodness sake. Hit us with some of the most interesting ones that you've been with and people that you kind of went, whoa, okay. Meant Warney, one of them.
Yeah, I mean, Warney was massive. I mean, I remember him walking into the change room and just being, and he was going out with Liz Hurley as well at the time, and she was coming in the change room as well. And it was just that, I was so starstruck with him. But obviously, it's so sad what happened. I mean, but I'm just so thankful that I got that chance to play with him and meet him. But yeah, he was obviously a wow moment. Playing with Chris Gayle, I mean, I'd played in so many franchise tournaments against him. So I finally, I think it was in the T10 recently, I finally got to play with him and bat with him, which was amazing. But again, even people like Yuvraj Singh, I mean, Yuvraj was, you know, obviously played so much against him playing for India. And that's going back to when I was saying how good it is to play franchise cricket in terms of improving, being able to sit and talk to him about playing spin in India. Even someone like Angelo Matthews, Ross Taylor, Brett Lee. I mean, I've been so lucky to play with all of them. And the big thing you realise is they're just normal blokes. I think we're so... You see these people and you think they're robots because they're so good at cricket. And for the mere mortals like myself, you sort of think they're something else. But actually being able to play with them and see they're just normal guys, they get nervous like most others. You know, they have the same things they worry about. And that actually was a big thing for us, you know, seeing that side of other people. And we're all cricket badgers. We talk to them. You're talking to them all the time about things you need to improve or what they do. And that's where you learn. You know, it's awesome.
Speaking of the West Indies, Luke, we were obviously all fascinated with the Alan Stanford documentary when it came out. You obviously played a quite a big role in that as a player, and also then on the recording of the TV show. What was the, I know you spoke about it on you spoke about this previously, but what was that experience like? Was it all a bit bizarre from the get go, or was it something that you were quite excited by?
Oh, I was excited about it. I mean, at the time, I mean, it was sort of, you know, as I said, I haven't been in the team that long, so it was great. The thought of that money, when you think about, even if someone said that tomorrow that you're going to play, you'd be excited about it. But as I said, from that moment, the whole lead up to it, the time we were out there, everything was just bizarre. And obviously, you know, it's all unfolding now with all what was going on and why it was so bizarre. But yeah, crazy time to think what happened and what been. It doesn't really seem real now. And it's crazy to think that actually, in a way, you're sort of relieved that we didn't win in a way, because I think it would have been even worse. But to even say that seems pretty bizarre, doesn't it, for $1 million each? But yeah, it's a strange time. But it was good fun in the documentary. I mean, the stuff that I didn't even know about watching it back, and a few times they had to even remind us about some of the other stuff that was going on. But yeah, crazy times.
Unbelievable. It's such a cool story to have been a part of, even though actually, you know, I know there's loads of sad bot parts to it and people sort of losing their money and stuff, but from your perspective and from the cricketer's perspective, being used as a commodity basically to try and, I don't know, it was just the whole thing. The story is amazing. If people haven't seen this, by the way, go and have a look. It's absolutely astonishing. There's a good podcast that Greg James hosts as well, which basically is like the TV show version. It's a brilliant, brilliant story. I want to talk to you about something in 2014. A lot of the listeners won't know about this, and I suspect that this is in our kind of notes here because our producer Chuck is a Sussex Badger. But there was a time 8 years ago, you were part of a record T20 run chase. You made 153 red, and it was despite Sussex nearly missing the start because of traffic. Explain this one. I've never heard this one before.
Well, what I realised from that moment was that warm-ups were overrated. And I've been trying to badger on for years saying, look, I got my best ever score when I didn't even warm up. But we, we set off okay, but there's almost like flash flooding. Like it literally chucked it down and we're trying to get through Dartford Tunnel. And the end of Dartford Tunnel basically flooded for whatever reason. So it took us hours to get to the game. And we actually got there. I think we got there with 5 minutes to spare. So they put the game back 10 minutes. We walked out to Nashi lost the toss. And I remember, or we won the toss and we were fielding. I can't remember which way it was. And we got smashed all over the park. And it was almost laughable. Like the coach at the time was going mad. Everyone was saying what shambles it was and everything. So for me, it was just like free go. You know, we're chasing loads of runs. I'm going to go out and have an absolute slog. And then the first few came out the middle and it went from there. Really. And it was crazy. I think we knocked them off in about 18 overs or something. It was literally mad. Remember Matt Machin got 50 as well, but just one of those crazy times. But it's quite nice to remind Ravi Parr, obviously, who's with Sussex now, about slogging some of his slow balls about. And
I just think, so you're obviously, you know, a batting consultant now for the Melbourne Stars, and I'm thinking, you know, you want to probably go into coaching. Is that something that you're going to be telling them, is it, in the franchises? Warm-ups are overrated, lads. On you go.
I think, do you know what? More and more people, I mean, I'm sure you've obviously all been to loads of T20 games. And what you realise is that by the time you actually come to do the warm-up, the lads have already done the bowl throughs, people have hit, people are doing catching. There's so many things that have already happened. So I think what even coaches have realised now, it's more a time just to get everyone together. It's more that, right, bring everyone together, get ready, rather than now massive warm-ups and stretching like they used to be. I mean, we used to warm up back in the day for sort of 40 minutes of running around, stretching, more running, you know, absolutely knackered by the time the game started. Whereas they've actually become shorter and shorter, sort of, you know, as I said, just more of a switch on thing now. But, you know, as an older bloke, the less a warm up, the better, to be honest with you.
Nice. Cup of tea and a biscuit and out you go absolutely, with your bat under your arm. Yeah, absolutely. I like that, mate. Yeah, I like that. are you harbouring ambitions? I'm guessing this batting consultancy stuff is probably something that you want to take a little bit further, maybe go into a bit of coaching. You'll have not only played alongside some of these amazing names that we mentioned a minute ago, but you'll have worked with some incredible coaches for short periods of times and obviously experienced a variety of different coaching sort of techniques, batting coaches, etc., in the England setup. Who have you drawn from? Who do you sort of look at and go, yeah, they were pretty good, and yeah, they'll be all right, and etc.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Stephen Fleming really stands out as a coach. And it struck me a chord, really. I mean, when he became, I spoke to him about becoming a coach and a head coach, and I said, you know, what's the biggest thing that you draw on, you know? And he said, I just wanted to get rid of all the things that annoyed me as a player is what I want to take on and be a coach, which actually made a hell of a lot of sense. And it's no surprise. I mean, he's always been a good thinker of the game, but I mean, you know, obviously he's gone and been an unbelievable coach. He's obviously won so many times in the IPL, etc. And it's a shame more teams can't get him to do other, you know, test match cricket and stuff, because as I said, he's such a great manager. And Dave Hussey's another one, obviously, at the Stars. He's been awesome again. But look, there's plenty of coaches that I've played with that you draw different bits from. Obviously, Andy Flowers, serial winner. You know, the things he's doing. I mean, even now, I think he got to the quarter, you know, the semi-finals of the IPL again. Every time he goes into a competition, he gets deep into competition. He's a bit more relaxed now than he used to be. He used to be a bit more of a shouter, be pretty intense when I play. I used to be scared to death of him. But it's nice to see him a bit more chilled these days. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, for me, I mean, I've just done a master's in directorship of sports. So I mean, I harbour ambitions to almost be above sort of trying to put coaches in place and structures in place is where I'd like to potentially end up. But for me, really, why I'm still playing, I'm trying to do as much coaching and see where it takes me. I absolutely love coaching as well. But just try and get a coach's perspective as well. I mean, you soon realise it's very different to being a player. And, you know, I enjoy it all. So I'm just trying to go with the flow and see where it takes me, really.
Yeah. And I just want to pick your brains on Baz McCullum, because, wow, what an appointment that is. At time of recording, we've not seen England play a test match under his stewardship yet as coach. Stokes is captain as well. Let's not forget that part. What were your thoughts? I want to know your initial reaction when you saw that, because he's a man that you'll know and you'll have come across plenty of times around the world, Luke. When that came out, did you think the same as us and just go, oh, hello, there might not be many day five test matches?
Do you know what? I'm not just saying this. I'd said the lads were all chatting in the change room about who would you have. And I'd actually said, if I was Rob Key, I'd go and get Baz McCullum. And I never thought it would actually happen, but I think it's awesome. And I think the fact that he's going to be doing the test match side as well, I think Ross Taylor did an interview saying he didn't see it happening, but if it did, he thought it'd be the white ball. But I think it's really smart. I think he's someone that's going to give us a bit of a lift. And he said, you know, as he said, test cricket needs England to do well as a whole. And I think all players are going to be excited about the way that he completely changed that New Zealand team around. I mean, look at them now. I mean, number one in the world, where they've been winning the test championship. I mean, everyone loves watching New Zealand play cricket. And that was all started from McCullum. And I know when people say about, well, he wasn't head coach, he was captain. But I mean, you listen and talk to any players who were involved in that, he pretty much ran the show and just happened to be playing as well. So I think it's a great appointment. It's going to take time, obviously. You know, things don't change overnight. But I think straight away it gives everyone a lift, doesn't it? And I'm sure he's going to be successful along with Stokesy. But again, I think it does take time. But I'm really excited about what it's going to bring for us.
Chris? Yeah, I was going to say you're excited about it as well. It's such an inspired appointment, that, isn't it? England's white ball stuff, I just want to pick your brains before we let you go about the fact that, in fact, we've got a very, very big burning question to ask you. Very, very, very important. We'll save that till the end. That's completely not true, by the way. It's something completely nonsensical. We that build up, that whole revolution, that white ball revolution, effectively England are trying to implement that same thing with the red ball here. You'd suspect they're going to try and create that kind of excitement, but also hope for the same level of patience from England supporters in terms of getting themselves back to the very top of the red ball game. You, in a way, kind of missed out a little bit on that white ball revolution. And I felt for you massively, actually, really, because you've been such a big part of that just prior to it. And then you kind of missed it, that whole World Cup thing. And not completely, you were still kind of part of it. And I'm sure that if you ask Owen Morgan, If you ask him about your contribution to that, he'd probably speak in glowing terms. What was the way that you saw that? Because it must have been a bit gutting, the fact that you weren't part of that whole kind of dynasty of success that we now are probably going to talk about for generations. But we all remember just before, where you were there scoring loads and loads of runs in an England shirt and part of that white ball, that new sort of way of playing. So just want to see how you see that, really.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I think you always get jealous when you saw what they're building, you know, in terms of sticking with players. I think Jason Roy's been the perfect example. You know, there was a time, I remember watching, you know, I think it was 7 months he was struggling to score runs. I think it was two or three series, but Morgs kept coming out and saying he will help us win a World Cup. If he gets in form, he's going to help us win a World Cup. And he's absolutely right. And I think we, you know, when we played, I was probably, in terms of 50 over cricket, one of the few that was trying to play that game, as you said, before it was almost acceptable. And a lot of the times it was, when I got a chance at the top, it was that whole go and play with freedom, but then get caught mid off. And then the next game you're batting eight again, or you're not playing. So yeah. It was really difficult, you know, and I wish I'd been given a bit of a run at it, but I mean, that's just the way it is. And like you say, things, I think, especially for Morgs, when we did win the T20 team, the one thing that Colly did was bring in that, this is going to be the team. We're sticking by it. We're not going to chop and change. And obviously we started to win, which always helps. But I think that was almost the start of it. I think obviously Morgs being part of that would have realised that was the way to go. And obviously what him and Strauss then put together has been amazing. And there's no surprise. I mean, the guys now, I mean, they're on a different level, aren't they? And it's not just that 15 players in the squad. There's another 30 lads that you could pick as well. And it showed, you know, during the COVID year against Pakistan, I think we picked our second or third team. And they're still awesome. And you feel for some of the players now who can't get in the team. But that's like almost like Australia, you know, in the 90s when they had the test team, that there's gun players who just couldn't get in that team. And that's where we are in white ball. And that's where we need to get to in test cricket, where we're leaving serious players out just because it's a team you can't get in. And hopefully, and I have no doubts, you know, we can get there. There's enough talent in county cricket. It's just getting it out of players and getting the right characters, I think, is a big one. I mean, you're looking at white ball team, those characters are nailed on blokes. And I think that's now what we're looking for in test cricket, isn't it?
Yeah, not half. Well said as well, to be fair. It's a good way of looking at it. And you've got your World Cup winner's medal anyway, Luke, come on.
I think my dad's got it somewhere. He's nicked it somewhere, I think.
Love it. Chris, cricket tees. It's a tricky one to try and explain. It's quite a simple question. Just wondering, actually, before we do ask you this very burning question that we're now asking every one of our guests for some stupid reason. I think it was my idea. Now I'm thinking, it's a bit daft, isn't it? But we, you know, when you're playing T20 cricket, we obviously have played the traditional club games and village cricket, etc. And what's it like T20 wise? I'm guessing that it's a far more professional setup than county cricket with the tees. I'm guessing it's all energy bars and you've had your carbs like the footballers do, you know, a couple of hours before the game, etc. It's not, you don't get your traditional cricket tees when you're playing in the Pakistan Super League or the Indian Premier League, do you?
Well, that's why I'm not going to play till I'm 40 odd, because it's that's another reason that's getting me out. Warm ups and the lack of good tees anymore. Yeah, it's all couscous and all this stuff, which is not right. So we actually had a really good old school. We had a second team game, warm up game. We played at Preston Nomads, an outground in Sussex, which is stunning ground. And the lady there put on a proper old school just spread normal tee, and I've never been so happy. Honestly, it was unbelievable. But then we went straight back to Hove and we're back on the boiled veg and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, time for me to go at some point. I'm certainly not hanging on to that.
Love it. We spoke to Matty Fisher a little bit earlier and he was on about the fact that, you know, he's like a, you know, Yorkshireman, loves his club cricket still, like goes and watches his local club, he was telling us. And I said, come on, hit me up. And he said, cold pizza, ham and cheese sandwich, a few crisps and that kind of thing, and a cup of tea and a nice big scone, right? So this is what we need from you here, Luke, is a sandwich, a savoury snack, a sweet treat and a drink. That's what we need from you. So come on, hit us up. You're obviously thinking about
sausage.
It on your mind.
Love a cocktail sausage.
Okay, nice, nice.
Happy with that. Cheese and pickle sandwich for me.
Cool.
Victoria Sponge.
Oh, is that your, little say your sweet treat, yeah?
Well, when we were at Bottisford, the Helen who used to do the teas, the Victoria Sponge, homemade Victoria Sponge was unbelievable. And just orange squash, I just remember it as a kid. Orange squash, we don't really have it around anymore.
Orange squash. What, like the, is that the dilute? Is that the
big... Just the dilute stuff, yeah. It's got to be the right mix sometimes, yeah. Get it wrong. Yeah, easy to get it wrong.
You can't beat that at drinks as well. Somebody toddling out with the jug and all the.
Yeah, but it's all because now it's all electrolytes and these tablets and stuff. But bit of old school orange juice put in there, dilute orange juice, top drawer.
Tell you what, cheese pickles not been on the radar really, has it? I think that's a great shout.
I enjoyed cheese pickle.
Yeah. Any crisps?
Monster Munch back in the day at ours. It was a bit of a...
I love that. Cold pizza. What do you think of Matty Fisher wanting cold pizza?
See, I like cold pizza, but we never actually had that back in the day. Everything was, to be fair, to when at Bosford, everything was homemade always.
Was
so
it?
Like, apart from the crisps, it would literally be, she'd just do everything. Like, all the cakes were all nailed on. Like, she's got, everything was done. I think even the bread was, I mean, I think she made it herself and things like that. It was amazing. Yeah.
That's awesome. Any charity games down at Bottisford?
I haven't been invited back to any, so maybe I wasn't. Maybe they didn't enjoy me that much. Or I ate too much of the teas. But
I was going to say, maybe that. Chris and I were thinking, could come down there.
I always think whenever you ask like village cricketers about any other ground, they talk about the tees first rather than the wicket or what it looks like. It's just about what the tees like.
Yeah, it's true. We asked Jason Holder. And I said, you know, come on, you played over a bit of county cricket. You'll have experienced a bit of that and maybe even popped to see some of the local cricket or whatever. And what did you think? He said, Lords. I was like, well, that's not really an answer, but Lords is what he said. Is Lords really as good as people say it is?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, it is unbelievable. We used to have Jason Lurie that would literally make sure that he bowled before lunch so that he knew he couldn't bowl after lunch at Sussex. Always would do it. He'd beg for the ball. And then you'd never see him do it for the rest of the 15 games anywhere else. He'd never bowl before lunch. But the amount of times he bowled that, it was, yeah. Lords is gone anyway, but the food is tremendous. So it's the one place, if you get out before lunch, you're not too disappointed.
It softens the blow.
It softens the blow. I bagged them at Lords and I had the best week ever. Honestly, I was a bit like, of all the places I'd normally been devastated, but I just absolutely filled my boots. Yes. But I got I'd smashed in a bacon sandwich in the morning and I'd put my picture of a bacon, typical picture, you know, on the balcony, bacon sandwich, but I'd done it over the balcony looking at Lords. And then I went and bagged them and I got absolutely hammered by the Sussex supporters telling me to stay off the fatty foods and score some runs.
Oh, no. you wouldn't want county cricket fans any other way, Luke.
No, absolutely right. Blaming it was the bacon sandwich that the reason I got a pair.
Luke, great to have you on, mate. All the best for your 20th professional season and the Shackles Are Off exclusive. Maybe 21st season of professional cricket as well. Top man, really appreciate you coming on. We'll have you on again and we'll chat a few things through at another point where it's where we can have a chat to you in a bit more depth. But yeah, top man, Luke, absolute hero for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, mate. Cheers, guys. Good to see you.
Cheers, pal. Podcast Network.